John Wayne. Isn't that a description of a real man? Well, we'll put aside three or four marriages, but you know, the kind of man who would take a beachhead, who would rout the bad guys, you know, real man, because we want to leave here with a concept of a real man. Well, Ronald Reagan. Well, let's put aside the multiple marriages, but you see where I'm heading? When we talk about real men, let's see, Dwight Eisenhower. We won't bring up Kay Summersby, but real man. Let's find a description of a real man. Let's see if you have a concept of what a real man is. Gary Cooper, a man of few words. Yup. Nope. You know, that kind of thing. Real man. That's what we want to find out. But we want to find out from a biblical perspective. Now, that's not too popular because, you see, Hollywood or its derivatives describe real men in different ways. Rhett Butler, or the character played by Clark Gable, some would conclude was a real man. He was tall, dark, not so dark, and handsome. Had that nice mustache, you know, and that little twitch and that little raised eyebrow and all those things. Real man, right? Is that consistent with your concept of a real man? And the idea of a portrait, of course, is that it frames, the picture is the portrait, but it's inside of a frame. And if in your cogitation, you might be sitting next to a real man, I'll grant that. Some of you ladies would agree that, well, yeah, I married a real man. Well, don't be so sure, but well, I think you're probably right if you're using the measure or the yardstick of the Bible. And if there's something we need today in our society, are real men. And we can wish they were in society, but we probably could start best at home within the confines of the church. Real men. I will never forget, in fact, it's coming up on the anniversary of my father's funeral that I performed in 1991. It was actually May 6th. He died on April 30th. And it was quite a challenge to do my father's funeral. And I know I shocked some people when I said, you know, my dad was not a good father. Was not a good husband, but he was a good man. That shocked some people because you don't stand up and say things like that. But the fact is, my dad and I were able to sit and talk over the waning years of his life about a lot of different things. And one of the things we talked about was how pleased he was that my mother did the job she did with the children, because he wasn't there. And he never had to get me out of jail or come to the rescue of my sisters because of a pregnancy or some other kind of difficulty. He never had to be faced with any of that because my mother did such a good job. But the fact of the matter is, what I was saying was that mothers can't replace real men. If you think that, and I know it's popular today to say, I can do bad by myself, I don't need anybody else. Ladies, say that. I don't need a man who's going to be a drain on me, and that's true. But to substitute a mother for real men is not biblical. When we go through the lives of the kings of Israel and you find the parents being named, and in particular the mother, as a view, perhaps, an aperture to view probably why the child went bad or was good, In the case of Josiah, in the case of other kings who turned out to be good kings, you find the mother mentioned because there's a team effort going on. I'll talk more about that tomorrow. Tomorrow's title will be A Portrait of a Godly Woman. But today we're talking about real men. And I'm going to go to a passage in the Bible, a place in the Bible where you probably wouldn't think to look. But it's there very clearly. And some of the problems today with men being men is that many men are sissies today. We just are, fellas. Because we don't want to deal with the tough things of life like raising children, rearing children. I mean, that's woman's work. And it's not. It takes a real man to do the kinds of things that real men do in perpetuating or at least building a foundation for decent citizens. We're in the shape we're in today because there has been an absence, a disappearance of real men in our society. And the evidence is all around us. And it is frighteningly clear even within the church. We are crying for laborers. Where are the real men? To step forward and take up the gauntlet. I don't want to be involved. Don't ask me to do that. But real men step up to the plate, as it were. We have athletes who are popular and we think they're real men till we find out they have feet of clay like everybody else. We happen to be in the state of my favorite baseball player of all time, Mr. Mantle. And we know that he has feet of clay, don't we? Perhaps you didn't watch the interview this week. I taped it. Because he was a man that everybody thought was a real man. Boy, he could run, throw that ball, chase it down, and hit those home runs. Real men can do that, which some people now are questioning whether Michael Jordan is a real man because he can't seem to hit the ball like he could play basketball. You know, we have these standards sometimes about what is a real man and a real woman and so forth, and we find out that they're just human beings with flaws like everybody else. Put their pants, as we say, on, you know, one leg at a time. Unless you sit on the bed and put both of them in at the same time. Just regular people. But let's take a look at an example that you wouldn't have thought of. In Job, the 29th chapter. Now, all right, let's get a hand, raise of hands. How many of you thought about Job as a real man? I see you're all honest, right? Okay. Job is the real man. Well, we know that he was put under severe pressure because of the testing of the Lord and the hand of Satan. But I want to just look at him from the point of view of our discussion about what is this portrait of a real man and some ingredients that a real man must have. Now, in 50 minutes, you can't cover everything about the subject. This is to whet your appetite. It is to incite you to some degree. It is to stimulate you because some of you are single and looking for real men. Some of you are married and still looking. I'm sorry. But if you are blessed, just listen because you might be able to pass it on to somebody else. But if you're in the throes of the dilemma, men, ladies, you're just listening in now. You're not making any judgments. You're just listening in. Your turn will come tomorrow. But the ingredients that are necessary to produce this real man must start with something that is very popular to talk about today. Character. Character. For a time in our society, for quite a length of time, we've concluded that character is really not all that important, you know. After all, if you can run, you can shoot, you can throw, and and do all those kinds of things that bring honor to your team and to your city through your athletic exploits, then you are categorized as real men. And some of these real men are the most distasteful people on the face of the earth, aren't they? We wear their shirts, we advertise their names, we treat them like gods. And they're just men. That's all. But Job, we find some very interesting things about this character issue. I'm going to break this character question down into seven areas. And men, see how you measure up. Ladies, as you have influence over your children, your grandsons and granddaughters and all that kind of thing, consider these important areas. First of all, a real man has divine continuity with the past. Divine continuity. That is, he's connected to something from the past. Divine is the operative term here. That is, there is God somewhere in the picture. If you're single, ladies, and you're looking for a real man and God is not important, go back and rethink it. Rethink it. The individual that you would want to marry or the individual that you are married to should have divine continuity. In Job, the 29th chapter, beginning in verse 2 through 5, we read these words. Oh, that I were as in months gone by, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone over my head, and by his light I walked through darkness. Not popular to talk in those terms that God leads or guides me. That's an important aspect to have of character when it comes to real men. As I was in the prime of my days, when the friendship of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me and my children were round about me. The point being that Job understood the divine continuity of the past, from his beginning to the current state of his life. God was important. Now, it's popular today, religious right and the Republicans and all of the conservatives, they're just making lots of hay off it. They're selling lots of books. You know, it's just very popular. But I remember from history that there was a popularity of, oh, shall we say, revival, even through the Old Testament, that was short-lived. What will be popular tomorrow isn't popular today. So it's just the wave. This is not the first time in American history that there's been a revival. But continuity is the operative term in this first aspect of character, because it means that it doesn't ride and fall like a roller coaster. It's plowing through. It is continuous. So a real man will have this as the first step. A real man, from a biblical perspective. Now, psychiatrists, and those who deal in the mind will probably come up with other criteria, but this is the biblical perspective. Job could look back over his shoulder and see the divine movement of God in his past. The man had divine heritage. You see, American heritage is just not enough. We like to think it is, but it's not. Divine heritage, a continuity, a continuous connection with the past. Somewhere along the way, we in our society have lost touch with the lineage. We don't know who we are. We don't know where we've been, and we definitely don't know where we're going. And it shows up in the life of the family. There are men who don't have this working for them, and so they are rudderless. They have no guide, they have no direction on achieving what is necessary. He had a different agenda, this Job, than many people because of this divine continuity. Here's a man who had 10 children. 10 of them. How easy it would have been to argue that he was too busy and too tired to pray. Instead, he spent the early mornings on his knees, bringing the family before the Lord. In the scripture, Job, the first chapter in verse 5, we read, and it came about when the days of feasting had been completed and had cycled, that Job would send and consecrate them, his sons, rising up early in the morning, offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "Perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did this continually. I'm going to use an example that I hope it doesn't irritate you or throw you off, but it's one that struck me when I was reading the autobiography of Malcolm X for the fourth time. It was authored actually by Alex Haley, and if you want some good reading, I would suggest you read it. It doesn't come across in the movie, but there was a point of his conversion to Islam. And I don't know how much you know about Islam, but there's a practice there within family structure that the father is in fact the real man. For he leads the family in its morning ablutions and washings and so forth, and leads the family in prayer, and leads the family in getting a spiritual direction, and declaring to them every day the divine continuity. Now, I could use other examples of that, but that one sticks in my mind for a number of reasons, and I share it with you to indicate that whatever you may conclude about Malcolm X, the fact is that within his family, he was the man who led, and he had a connection with his Allah, with his God, and his approach that caused his family to this day, 25 years or actually almost 30 years since his death, through his children, he had 4 daughters, who respect his memory, who have continued a life of service and dedication in a religious sense. And that didn't just happen. Nothing just happens. It has to be something else than that. And so in this example then of Job praying for his children in case they have cursed God or sinned, leading the family, leading the way, that was his approach. And it's important that we recognize the necessity of having such a degree of continuity with the past, divine continuity with the past. Secondly, a real man is committed to raising, or if you prefer the term, rearing children. Committed. That is tough. Being committed to rearing children, well, I work all day. You know, I've got a tough job, and when I come home, I'm tired. Well, the wife then says, well, I've worked all day too. So what are we going to do about these children? Well, that's woman's work, isn't it? They're supposed to raise the children. They're supposed to get them where they need to be. And unfortunately, in our country, that has been the way it's been. But real men are committed to raising or rearing their children. Notice again in Job 29 and verse 5, my children were around me. My children were around me. That is, he made sure that he was interfacing with them, that he was communicating with them, that he was spending time with them. He wasn't showing up at the tent after the kids were put to sleep. You know how that is. Because you wait till they're asleep so you don't have to deal with them. Now, I know that some of you have raised children, they're out of the house and they're gone. But you have grandchildren. And the things I'm saying, well, you might have to influence them in some way down the road. Or your own children who are now trying to make something of their lives with their own children, or you still might have a few around. And if you are a real man, you're going to be involved in your children's life. I don't know of a better example of a gentleman. Well, there are two of them sitting in the audience. I don't know if I'll embarrass them or not, but I do know that their children are still around them, and they're still involved in their lives, and that says a lot. In our society, when our children have so many messages coming upon them, the main message, and one thing I told my youngest daughter, I said, you know, the only thing that protects you in this society is a father. That's the only thing. Because if you don't come under his protection, you're all alone. Because there are wolves and cutthroats and thieves out there who are waiting to find you vulnerable. And a real dad is going to recognize that. A real man is going to recognize that. And I honor Mr. Justice, Mr. Gross, as examples of men who have interfaced with their children in very clear and distinct ways, because they recognize this is important. Very important to be committed to raising children. He wasn't rushing his children to bed so he could watch TV or do whatever it is that men do, you know, maybe do a six-pack or some such thing. But he wanted them around him so he could relate to them and listen to them and instruct them and teach them and catch little attitudes that need to be nipped in the bud. And to acquaint them with the reality of life. Commitment to that is very, very important. In Job's age, it was understood that parenting involved a commitment not only to quality, but to quantity. We make an excuse today, well, I spend quality time with them. You know, that means a half hour. But quantity, that means sometimes foregoing other things that you really want to do and instruct them on how to sacrifice to accomplish a greater good. It's important. How far will you go out of the way in instructing children, real men, in things of that nature? The way to build a nation, or in our case, a church community, is by multiplication of families. So the principle is that if one house does it and the next house does it, it just multiplies, it expands. And we are in a quest for real men within families, and thus strengthen the church. Third point. A real man earns respect. Doesn't demand it. Because you have testosterone does not mean you automatically obtain respect. You know, testosterone, it's a testosterone thing. Because you can have a beard, you know, or you have to shave, doesn't mean that you automatically receive respect. Earning respect is a very different thing from simply expecting respect. A real man behaves in such a way that you have no choice but to respect him. Job, the 29th chapter, verse 7 through 10. It says here, describing Job, or Job describing himself, when I went out into the gate of the city, downtown, if you will, when I took my seat in the square, city council, maybe, the young men saw me and hid themselves. And the old men rose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongues stuck to their palate. Now, how could that be accomplished? If Job was just any old body, good old boy, redneck, spitting tobacco all over the place, rebel flag waving, gun rack. I mean, none of those things maybe by themselves are evil except spitting that stuff out, or chewing that tobacco. But the point is that when Job showed up, all the other men respected him. They recognized that here was a real man. I remember the time in my youth, and perhaps some of you do, knew when real men showed up, if you were acting up as a young boy, you straighten up. When a real man came into your presence, it may have been your father, an uncle, or a guy on the street, on the corner, or, living on the block. Now real men are made fun of and laughed at, and we have redefined what real men do. But by our actions, we determine whether or not we receive or have earned respect. Job went to the gate of the city and sat in the square. The young men saw him and said, "We got to go. We got to move out of here because Mr. Job is here." When young men see you now, do they sneer? How do your children, your sons, react in your presence? You have to demand respect, or have you earned it? By them being able to calculate your standard of character and your standard of how things ought to be. Once older men and women were treated with kindness and respect by virtue of their years, now they are seen as easy prey, somebody to rob, somebody to hurt, to injure. Now, we can say that's how it is out there, but how is it in here with real men? Do you carry yourself in the midst of the congregation when you see children acting up, running on the stage, or doing whatever they're doing that they ought not be doing? Are you man enough, real men, to make a difference? Take them to their parents. Talk to their parents if their parents need to be talked to. That's not a ministerial job. Real men stand up when it's time to stand up. And by virtue of them having earned respect, they obtain respect, not by demanding or commanding or raising their voice or saying, "Don't you know who I am?" How many times the phrase, "I'm a minister of Jesus Christ," to demand respect without earning it, has been said. I said it once. I always said I never would say it. And when I heard it coming out of my mouth, I really felt bad, because it had been said to me a few times in those old regimes, And I set out a course in those days to begin to earn it without having to rely on that old cliche. We find Job being described here as an individual, if we want to bring it up to modern times and call the princes of this city yuppies. The fact that when he came around, the smooth-talking, deal-cutting individuals got out of the way and gave Job his respect. That's a high, tough situation, to be sure. Very difficult thing to obtain, but that's what real men are required to do. Number four, Job also was a man of mercy, and real men are men of mercy.
tough sometimes to give mercy. Job 29, verse 12, 13. Job says, I have delivered the poor who cried for help, and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of one ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. Real men are men of mercy. If you believe that real men don't cry, well, I guess Jesus Christ just wasn't a real man. We have two recorded instances, and we can modify it and mitigate it and say, well, you know, he cried at Lazarus' tomb because, well, it was their unbelief, and that was certainly part of it, but Lazarus was a friend of his, too. And he wept over the city of Jerusalem as well. Real men do cry. Never eat. And they smoke camels, unfiltered. So the standard is not what's out there or on television or in printed material or on in the movies. The real standard is the Word of God. And we're just looking at one man, one example of an individual that we can extract the principle from about the necessity of character. And this man had mercy. He was compassionate because he looked upon the needs of others and saw those less endowed than himself. And he did something about it. Real men have enough compassion to recognize and respond to the pain of others. They don't feel the need to hide or deny those tender feelings. Real men must show this. And they have the courage to act on behalf of those weaker or less fortunate than themselves. Fifth point about this, the character of a real man. A real man is a man of justice. Not rights. We love to throw that around. My rights. Well, what about justice? Justice means that. And I don't know where the boy's father was over there in Singapore, you know, the fellow, the American kid who was spray painting cars and throwing rocks at cars and was sentenced to, what, 6 lashes or something like that. I've just seen his mother. I haven't seen his dad, and, you know, he may be dead. I don't know where dad is in the whole scenario. But there's a lot of hand-wringing going on about the fact that this kid was out of line in a country that he was a guest in, that had rules and laws and regulations that, whether you like it or not, that's over there. And when you're in somebody else's house, I was taught, you obey the rules of the house or suffer the consequences. And I never thought that 6 lashes, bare-bottomed though it may be, is that severe. Where are the real men to stand up and say that? Child abuse? Well, if you hit them, it'll teach them how to hit. That's what Oprah says. But real men are men of justice who recognize that there must be a penalty for an action or a reward for an action. Real men stand up and say, as Job says in the 29th chapter in verse 14 through 16, I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and turban. He was dressed in it. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. He's going to find justice. He's going to find out the truth of the matter. Doesn't go off half-cocked. Doesn't react with half of the information. There are so many proverbs that confirm this. But real men are men of justice. Solomon, in the great wisdom he displayed in that situation with the 2 mothers and the child, is an example of an individual with justice as the focal point. Job had it, many of the servants of God had it, and real men should have this quality as well. I'm moving ahead. I saw Mr. Dart has come in and don't want to go too long, because he's scheduled at 4 o'clock. Sixth point. A real man is a man of stability. Stability. It says in Job, the 29th chapter, verse 18 and 19, "Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all night on my branches." Now, what is that saying? When you talk about somebody spreading out their roots, that means they are solidly set. I know a gentleman who describes his father. He says, you know, his father was getting old. My dad, in one way, was like that. He lived in a two-story apartment, the first one he moved in when he moved back to Atlanta. He stayed there till he died, and the thing that happened to him, he died. Well, he wasn't dead when he was found, but he fell in that bathtub, and he stayed there for 2 days before somebody came and found him, and he was set in his ways. He was going to stay in this place. I would have preferred that he'd moved, but he didn't choose to. This is where I'm going to end my life. This is where it will come to an end. This friend of mine describes his father as living in the ghetto of Baltimore, the big cities, you know. And every time he visits him, he encourages Dad to move out. Crime is rampant. They're selling drugs everywhere. And his father's point was, look, I've raised all my children here. This is where I have lived all my life. And I can be an example here of a man who believes in God. And I'm not leaving. Now, the wise observation, the wise perspective, we can argue it. But the point is, he was a man who had put down some roots, and he was going to stay. Now, we can move that example into a different setting, but the principle is still the same, of being solid, being stable, of being sure. The sun rises, and you know that some people, strong, real men, are going to be prayerful, who are going to be polite and gentle and kind and all of those things that we don't commonly associate with real men, but the stability factor is important. If God can lead you through the wilderness, He can lead you anywhere, and He can be with you anywhere. A man who knows what God has called you to do will cause you to be stable. Families today lack dependable men. They lack roots because they lack purpose and direction. But a real man is stable in that. He has roots. He has direction. A real man may be on the move like Abraham, but he finally knows what his call is, and his family knows where he's going, and they just pack up and go with him. Can you imagine an Abraham today? We got to pack up the tent. We got to go. What? We just got here. I ain't packing up. Give me my stuff that I need to stay here. You know, Sarah, today. I'm sorry, I just got me a nice important gig, a job over here. You know, I'm on a career move. We can't leave here. How far we've come, finally. A real man, in the biblical sense, has wisdom. Job 29, verse 21 through 25. "To me they listened and they waited and kept silent for my counsel. After my words they did not speak again, and my speech dropped on them. And they waited for me as for the rain and opened their mouths as for the spring rain. I smiled on them when they did not believe, and the light of my face they did cast down. I chose a way for them and set as chief and dealt as a king among the troops, as one who comforted the mourners." The man had a lot of wisdom. A lot of wisdom. You don't need a college education or degree to be wise. In fact, there are a lot of educated, well-educated fools. Got lots of degrees. That's not what determines wisdom. True wisdom is the ability to take God's truth and apply it to real life. Take God's truth and apply it to real life. All it requires is a heart for God and some plain, old, common sense. James 1 verse 5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Real men. Like I said, in 50 minutes, you can't, you just can't cover it. But in the issue of character, which is popular to talk about today, in review, we're talking about the seven aspects of character of a real man. He has divine continuity with the past. He is committed to rearing and raising children. He's a man who earns respect, a man of mercy, a man of justice, a man of stability and wisdom. Now, I don't know how your report card will look, but if you analyze yourself as we are to do during these days of unleavened bread, perhaps you don't like what you see. Perhaps you see maybe you could do something a little better. Then I encourage you to develop the goal of being a real man, not by some artificial standard that doesn't work. I mean, how many folk concluded that Jimmy Johnson was a real man? And Jerry Jones, real men. So what do you think today? You know? Real men. Men, you see, what's missing in those two gentlemen's life is a spiritual focus. All they've got is either money or rings. And I hear that some people even hawk their rings. Super Bowl champions. Hawk, sell them, you know, get rid of them. Muhammad Ali, when he came back from winning, before he was Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, he won the gold medal, you know, over there at the Olympics, threw it off the Louisville Bridge, in one of those muddy rivers over there. Those things don't matter. That's not what determines real men. Real men are standards that come right out of the Bible that we find successes and failures. Failures to correct your course, successes to guide your path. If you are questing to truly be a real man, examine yourself by the Word of God. Tomorrow we'll talk about the portrait of a godly woman.